CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor with Tom Jossin and Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. They keep the Long War Journal, which I highly recommend to watch the reporting that's coming out of Afghanistan and the region in these weeks and months and years henceforth, because the Taliban is non-transparent, but it has a sophisticated understanding of moving its message not only to its allies and the Arab world, the Ummah, but also to Europe and the United States. And we come now to the registration of 9/11 by Al-Sahab, which is a media branch, sophisticated media branch. These are not men living in caves who don't have electricity. We're talking about extremely careful arrangements of staging, opera. They understand it, that the image is everything, and the timing of the image is equally important. Tom, you've written up the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 hijackings by Al-Sahab. What is Al-Sahab? Where do we think it exists? And is there a unique or advanced presentation because of the handover of Afghanistan to Taliban?
Well, you know, it's interesting, John. Al-Sahab is the longstanding central media arm for Al-Qaeda's senior leadership. We know from the U.S. State Department and other sources that it's actually headquartered in Iran, inside Iran, that Abdulrahman al-Maghrebi, who is the son-in-law of Ayman al-Zawahiri and a senior Al-Qaeda leader, he's the longtime director of Al-Sahab, and he's based in Iran and has been based in Iran since 2015. Now, with the 9/11 anniversary this year, of course, you would expect a lot of different videos and statements to come out from Al-Qaeda. They didn't put out that much material. And I suspect, John, looking at watching everything I watch on social media from Al-Qaeda accounts, I suspect that there was actually some disruption from external actors in terms of what they put out. I wouldn't be surprised if we learn sometime in the future that the U.S. or its allies actually interfered with the electronic distribution of Al-Qaeda's materials on 9/11 anniversary. They did put out a video that featured Ayman al-Zawahiri. That documented that Ayman al-Zawahiri actually is alive. Remember, there were all these so-called experts in the counterterrorism community, really a lot of charlatans who were pretending that Zawahiri was dead, and they knew he was dead for some time. And, of course, that wasn't true. He wasn't dead at all. But, you know, this video basically was aimed at sort of, you know, providing another message, a global narrative for the jihad, for Al-Qaeda and its various iterations. What I would say is this, however, I just wrote up at Long War Journal another video that came out. This is part of what we've detected in Al-Qaeda's media apparatus. They've actually distributed responsibility to lesser known Al-Qaeda affiliated media groups. One of them is this group known as Nashir Al-Khair. I wrote up the video because it's a very interesting look at how they're portraying 9/11 in the historical context. A lot of it isn't new, but some of it is a little bit new. They open basically with scenes of the Taliban special forces. And if you listen to Bill and myself through the years, you know that we've collected evidence showing that Al-Qaeda played a very prominent role in training, inspiring, and directing the Taliban special forces. And so this 9/11 video opens with these guys who are very elite paramilitary trained commandos. And it puts them in the context of Al-Qaeda's global campaign of terrorism, their terrorism against the West and 9/11 and similar attacks, which is a very interesting framing for this. And one of the things I suspect going forward, John, is that this type of training, if not these types of trainees, and maybe some of these experienced commandos, this type of training does lend itself for attacks in the West against civilian targets and others. So I wouldn't be surprised if this video is sort of a leading indicator of the next stage of the sort of the Mumbai-style attacks that we could see plotted by Al-Qaeda and its various branches.
I'm looking at some of the stills that you've included of Nashir al-Khair, and I'm noting that the terrain looks strikingly familiar. Do we know where this is? Is this in Afghanistan? And is this affiliated with the training camps that we've long talked about that are difficult to locate?
You know, John, it's familiar to you because you've read through all of Bill's write-ups of the Taliban special forces training camps through the years, and some of it is the same imagery. Some of it's the same scenery, same camps, same places. But isn't it telling that this Al-Qaeda affiliated group is using this imagery, is using this footage as if it's its own, as if it's Al-Qaeda's footage, and folding it into this 9/11 related narrative? That's what's interesting to me about the video, is that it's sort of a wink and a nod to the fact that Al-Qaeda was playing a heavy role in directing these special forces and training them all along. And we know from the UN Security Council, from all the granular reporting we've done on al-Qaeda figures who have been killed in Afghanistan, operational evidence, all sorts of documents, all sorts of evidence that, in fact, al-Qaeda has been playing this role in the Taliban special forces. So it isn't new to us that this would be the case, but it's interesting that they're advertising it in a 9/11 narrative.
Bill, about the training that we're witnessing, and over the years, as Tom says, I've watched a lot of the videos that you provided, leaping through fire circles, as I recall, a lot of demonstration of what you'd have to say are circus trips, circus tricks. Do we, in any sense, understand how they recruit their special forces? Do we know about the unit that you identified as Taliban special forces that was in Kabul? Do we know where they come from? Are they Afghan natives? Are they from Arab countries? Are they from everywhere?
So, John, it's difficult to know. And the Taliban is not transparent on this issue. But I do believe, and first of all, that border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, is the Durand line, is very fluid. So it's very likely that members of it are Pakistani. Keep in mind, groups like the Haqqani Network and other Taliban groups span the tribes, span the border. So that wouldn't be a shock if they're Pakistanis. A lot of people along that border don't view themselves as Afghans or Pakistanis particularly. But I've seen in a lot of these videos, John, where people's faces were blurred out. And it wasn't the commander of the groups, but often fighters. And in a lot of cases, you'll see them, they're all masked. Now, it could be they're protecting individual identity, but in the videos where where you will see faces and then faces are blurred, that is typically an indication that someone is either a member of al-Qaeda or another jihadist group. Again, I'm making a little leap there, but that's what we've seen in past videos, both from Afghanistan and Pakistan. It is usually a tell that someone may be not be either like from the Afghan or Pakistan area. So again, can't prove it, John, but that's we do know, though. Again, Mullah Sangin Zadran, he was involved in training and recruiting. He was calling for Turkmen and for Turkish and Kurdish and other foreign fighters to come to Afghanistan. We know that there's been individuals from the Caucasus and from Arab countries and even from Africa that have come and fought in Afghanistan. So I don't think, I suspect that when we see a lot of those blurred images, that's what we're getting here, is that those were indeed foreigners serving within the Taliban special forces. One more quick point, John.
Yeah.
Just if I may. You know, the jumping through hoops and everything, people laughed at that. And yeah, there sort of is a comical thing, but we got to understand, to them, those are confidence building and, you know, it's a way for them to build their esprit de corps. And we don't jump through fire in the U.S. military or anything like that. But there are similar silly things that other foreign cultures might look at us going over monkey bars or whatever else is being done. And look at that and laugh and say, look at how sophomoric that is. But there's specific reasons for doing that.
I'm looking at some of the videos from the past. And Bill, these men, young men, are uniformed in fatigues and they're training martial arts or with automatic weapons. This is a very far from the characters we're presented to in Kabul these last weeks. The ragamuffins, the bearded ones carrying Kalashnikov, standing around in what appear to be rags and sandals. So is there that distinction of dress made in the Taliban? Some people get really cool uniforms that are made in China, and some people have to deal with their mother's rags?
Yes. Yeah, so this goes back well over a decade when the Taliban issued directives about fighting in Afghanistan. And one of the things they had told their fighters is dress like the locals. So you have basically two Taliban militaries here is what you are seeing in Kabul. You're having your average Taliban fighters. Some of these are coming in from the districts outside of Kabul or from provinces like Logar, Wardak, Lagman, Parwan. They came in and to help secure Kabul for the Taliban. And then you had your professional Taliban military, your special forces is what the Taliban refers to them. Those are the ones you're seeing with the uniformed with helmets and American weapons and, you know, with the night vision goggles. So that's the more professionalized Taliban military, and that's what they refer to their special forces. So that's what you've been witnessing in Kabul. You know, so the Taliban now has created a defense department and has a chief of staff. I suspect you'll start seeing the average Taliban foot soldier more often than not wearing uniforms at some point in the future, but you'll still probably have this local, your local Taliban dressing as a regular Afghan foot.
Bill Rajo, Tom Johnson, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. They keep the long word journal. We're going to turn to Al-Qaeda, what we know next. Bill and Tom address it in their new podcast, Generation Jihad. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.